God is not in the Megillah. You know, how you hear this definitive statement about Purim can teach us a lot about how you view the world and history. One of the ways to look at it is to say, no, it's true, God is really not there. We're on our own now. Perhaps God was once, but God's not in the Megillah anymore. This is a type of deism, right? The belief that God created the world and perhaps even guided it its way for a little while, but he backed off now. And the challenge of this deism is that it can slide gradually in two different directions. One is atheism. You know, God's not there becomes God doesn't care what I do becomes there is no God quite quickly. Or it can actually become a strangely world-rejecting religiosity, which says, no, my actions matter, but only insofar as they're points that I can rack up for the really big payoff in another world. Either way you look at it, both of these perspectives reject any intrinsic meaning in history. History just becomes a playing field for me to score points on, or it becomes completely meaningless. The other way to hear this statement of God is not in the Megillah is to say, no, God really is there. It's just that God is no longer a main character in the drama. He's become the director. And we are marionettes. And now, not a leaf falls from the tree, but that God desires it to be so, whether we see him pulling the strings or not. Now, granting God the role of micromanager might seem really frum, but notice that it reduces our agency to almost meaninglessness and confines the expression of our free will to conformity with his will. And in that sense, history becomes an unfolding of his absolute will, and our role is to get on board or get out of the way. There is a third way of understanding this perspective that God is not in the Megillah. And that's that God is there, but he's choosing to hide from us. You know, this is made clear in the beginning of the Megillah itself when we're introduced to our protagonist, whose name is, what? Whose name is Hadassah. But very quickly we're told that we'll know her as Esther, the hidden one. And in case you missed it in the plain reading, then the sages went out of their way to point it out. There's an amazing series of questions in the Gemara in Chulin on page 139b. I highly recommend you work it out. You check it out. And there's a series of questions which are seeking to locate the certain biblical personalities in the Torah itself. That means it's trying to identify their existential roots in creation. Now, amongst these personalities are Moshe, which is a question unto itself. What does it mean to ask where we find Moshe in the Torah? I leave you to contemplate that on your own. And all the characters of the Megillah. And amongst them, Esther. So Esther min HaTorah minayin. Where is Esther found in the Torah? And the Gemara quotes to us an amazing passage. V'anuchi haster astir panai b'yom hahu. And I will surely hide my face on that day. It's Devarim, chapter 31, line 18. Now, generally, Hester Panim, the idea that God hides his face, is perceived as a punishment. And indeed, in its context, one might read it as so, right? It says in the preceding lines, this is God's command to Moshe to write down Ha'azinu, the visionary poem, which stands as both a testimony, meaning I warned you that this would happen to Am Yisrael so we could never claim we didn't know, and also a vision of what history will be and it's playing out. And it says there that God says they're going to forsake me and violate my covenant, and my fury will rage against them, and I will abandon them and hide my face from them. And so it seems very logical to read this as a punishment. But what if this is not a punishment at all, but rather a new educational program to take us to the next level? What if it's not anger at all, but tough love? What do I mean? We're going to come back to that pasuk in its context. But in order to really illuminate the question, we have to take a peek at another Gemara which discusses Esther. not only Esther, but the historical transition which she embodies, which is recorded in the Megillah. And that's the Gemara in Yoma, which asks the question that Esther is compared to the dawn in the Book of Psalms in Tehillim. She's called Ayelet HaShachar, the doe of the dawn. And so the Gemara asks, why is Esther compared to the dawn? And the answer it gives is astounding. It says, Esther Sof Kol Hanisim. Esther is the end of all the miracles. And just like the dawn comes after the dark, so too Esther comes after all the miracles. Now, what does this mean? One thing I can tell you is that it means that miracles are darkness. And what does it mean that miracles are darkness? I mean, in general, when we look to see where the light of God appears in the world, don't we point to the splitting of the Red Sea? To standing at Sinai? To the 10 plagues? I mean, in a month and a half, we're going to sit at the Seder table and recount all of the miraculous events of our past in order to infuse our children with a vision and hope for the future. So how could it be that miracles are darkness? In order to get at this, I think we have to look at the background to the story of the Megillah, because the Megillah, of course, is a particular playing out of a cosmic struggle between God and Amalek, between the arch nemesis of Israel. And if we look for the original appearance of Amalek in the Torah, it comes indeed on the heels of many miracles, 10 plagues. The splitting of the Red Sea, following a pillar of fire through the desert, and suddenly Am Yisrael asks a very simple and somewhat astounding question. Hayesh Hashem Birkim Beinu Im Ayin. Is God within us or not? Now, if you or I were to ask that question, it would be fairly logical. But they're following a pillar of cloud by day and fire by night. They just came through the Red Sea. What kind of question is it? And it's very important, because what follows on the heels of this question is Amalek. They come and strike at the weakness that this question articulates. And classically, we understand this as their lack of emunah, their lack of faith in God, brought on the enemy. But in order to really appreciate the depth of the question, we have to understand how anyone who is seeing God so clearly in ways that we can't even imagine could ask the question at all. And the answer is, it's not a foolish question, it's a childish one. In the sense that an infant has no sense of object permanence. When the mother is there, the mother exists. When the mother is gone, the mother does not. When I'm holding a little child, I exist. And when I let go, I do not. When Am Yisrael asks, is Hashem with us or not? It's because in the moment that they don't see his miraculous presence, they truly don't know that he's there. And now another way to say this is that if I flooded the room in which you're sitting right now with an incredible amount of light, would you be able to see even better? No. You would be blinded. Blinded by the light. And it might take you quite some time to recover your vision. You know why that is? It's because the eye actually defines what it sees through contrast. Right? You need shadow in order to learn to see. Too much light will blind you. And that's exactly what happened in that infantile stage coming out of Egypt. And so Amalek came and attacked. And God, after all said and done, after they drive back Amalek, go and get the Torah, wander in the desert for 40 years, tells Moshe, listen, this isn't going to work. These people need to grow up. Because if I keep holding their hand and showing them my miracles, they'll be infants forever. And so if we look back at Esther min HaTorah min Nayin, where is Esther in the Torah? We should take a closer look at the context. You know, that's line 18, chapter 31, 18 in Deuteronomy. But if you look at what comes right before it, God says, right, my fury will rage against them on that day. I will abandon them and hide my face. They'll be consumed in many evils and troubles befall them. And they will say on that day, Hallo, alki ein Elohai bekirbi, matzuni haraota eleh. Isn't it because our God is no longer amongst us that these evils have befallen us? Do you hear it? It's the echoes of the question that bring about Amalek. God is saying, if you think that just because things go wrong, because you're suffering, that means I've hidden from you, remember, you stepped away from me. And why would you step away from me, says God, because you're still little children. And every parent knows that as much as you want to stop your child from touching the hot stove, crossing the street against the light, meeting bad people, having terrible experiences, at a certain point, you have to let them go. You have to put your faith in them and not just have them put your faith in you. And so God says, I guess the only response to this terrible situation where these people don't know what to do unless I'm holding them hand is, Haster, Astir Panai Bayom Ahu, I will surely hide my face on that day, not as a punishment, but in order to show my faith in them that they will eventually find me. You know, our master and teacher, Rav Kook, spells historia, the Hebrew word for history, with a tough. That may not sound very important to you, but if you spell historia with a tet, it's indicative that it's a foreign concept. Basically, because a tet represents a word which is borrowed from another language. It's basically a false framework in relation to the past, and by the way, in particular to the Torah. If you're curious to hear more about such a false framework and how the Torah really understands the past, I encourage you to check out my classes in Remember the Days of Old. You can find them on SoundCloud or shoot me a message at info@sulamyakov.com and I'm happy to connect you. But when you spell historia with a tough, then it becomes hester, yeah, a hiding of God. And it opens out a new horizon of understanding. God's not absent from history, like the first understanding of God is not in Megillah, nor is God some puppet master that is pulling all the strings and making your history meaningless through his micromanagement. He's hiding within. And the question is why? You know, why do we wear masks on Purim? And there are lots of reasons, not the least of which is because it's fun. But one is that by hiding our visible self, we can somehow free an inner part of our nature. We allow people to respond not just to who they see, but to who perhaps we choose to be. So when God chooses to hide in history, when his name is written out of the Megillah, he's not gone. In fact, he's holding my hand even as I say these words, but not because I'm a little child and he's helping me cross the street, but because I'm a grown man and I've reached out to take his. But you know what? God's not pulling my strings, making me into a marionette. He's calling to me through the events of the world. He wants me to seek him. He wants to hide so that I can find him and know him not just as an all-powerful king and the mighty parent who shapes my world and keeps me safe, to whom I have to be beholden and in whom I must have faith, but he wants me to know him as the lover who desires to build the world together with me, who believes in me. And in order to express that belief in me, he takes a step back and gives me the space to make history with him. If you like this Torah, you can find more of it at sulamyakov.com. You can find us on iTunes and on Stitcher. You can follow us on SoundCloud. You can come on down to the Beit Midrash here in Nachlaot anytime.